The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, coming to you live on this beautiful Monday afternoon here at Edstone. Following an exciting weekend of broadcasting, we had the Saturday edition, lockdown, the self-isolate edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I think 5,300 views so far on that YouTube video. A little more than 1,000 that were listening to that live. I think several hundred more listening to the live stream on KPCG and Facebook and other such things. So great to have a large audience on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we certainly enjoy having you all through the week as well. And we appreciate you tuning in to today's show. President Trump tweeted out last night, "We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself." This was a theme that we hit on repeatedly last week. And picking up on that theme, the president himself said, look, we can't let the cure be worse than the disease. And he went on to say, at the end of the 15-day period, we will make a decision as to which way we want to go. He had the entire tweet in all caps. So I guess we're about halfway through the 15 days. This is day 7 or 8, I believe. So we'll see. We'll see if he's about to make some significant changes. But finally, you have a prominent voice of sanity and reason. Maybe someone from the Trump administration is listening in to this program. Actually, he probably was watching Fox News last night when Steve Hilton used that same analogy. Here's clip one.
Our ruling class and their TV mouthpieces whipping up fear over this virus, they can afford an indefinite shutdown. Working Americans can't. They'll be crushed by it. You know that famous phrase, the cure is worse than the disease? That is exactly the territory we are hurtling towards. You think it's just the coronavirus that kills people? This total economic shutdown will kill people.
That's Fox News last night. And on its website, there's an article, Trump hints at the possibility of less restrictive approach in coronavirus fight. So perhaps some of these just crazy restrictions are about to be lifted. Meanwhile, you have the rest in the media. They continue to scream at the top of their lungs, scaring anyone and everyone who will listen, telling them this is the end. This is the end of the world. I just, we had the broadcast Saturday afternoon here at Edstone. Saturday night, I watched some of the news coverage. I guess you have the BBC, you know, far to the left, and then Sky News is not supposed to be quite as left-wing, but still, they're all pretty much in on this together. But the coverage on Sky News all weekend, I watched about a half hour of it Saturday night, and then 15, 20 minutes of it last night, and all through, there was some detailed coverage. It was, I'm sure the way they view it, it was comprehensive, starting even in the Wuhan market, where this woman was supposed to have gotten sick on December 10th, and then how it spread from there throughout Wuhan, and then how China tried to contain it. They didn't really dwell on the fact that China tried to conceal it, but we'll let that go. Then how it spread around the world, and then the crisis in Italy, the shortage of hospital beds, and then how this virus is spreading beyond Italy, and the implication being that we are all Italy. We're going in the same direction. And now there's a run on the supermarkets. And now you have all these countries, these cities, these major metropolitan cities under lockdown. And amid all of this doomsday coverage, what did they not say? I didn't see one instance where they said, you know, the vast majority recover from this disease. And the ones that are the most at risk are the elderly or those that have an underlying health condition. There was none of that. It's just all meant to frighten everyone. And then these same authorities, they're on the same airwaves saying, now look, those of you that are hoarding toilet paper, you've got to stop. Listen, we don't want to panic. We don't want to panic. Well, look at the news. Look at the coverage. No wonder people are clearing the shelves at Tesco. This is from the BBC. This is the website. Sir Patrick Vallance, the government's chief scientific advisor. Here is your chief scientific advisor. He said in an appearance before the Health Select Committee that the hope, here's the hope. The hope was to keep the death toll below 20,000 by suppressing the virus. He's talking about the UK death toll. Right now it's at 281. And his goal is to keep it under 20,000. It says that would still be worse than those killed by the flu. He said, giving a number of 8,000 per year. So you have 8,000 per year dying in the UK because of influenza. And he says here, limiting deaths to 20,000 would be horrible, but still represented a good outcome given where we are. So you're reading the BBC and you think, well, 20,000, you know, that's pretty good. I guess that's pretty good. This is their optimistic forecast at the BBC. Now, they in this article, they go through three different scenarios. If nothing is done, if we take no action at all, then 510,000 people will die as a result of coronavirus. 500,000 people right here in Britain. The second choice is if we take some action, slow the spread of the virus, including isolating vulnerables, those with symptoms. If we do that, there's 250,000 deaths. If we go to the extreme measures of all this self-isolating, social distancing, shutting things down, closing the pubs, closing the stores, reducing social contact altogether, well, then we might be able to get it down to 20,000. That's still horrible, but all things considered, it's a pretty good number. Now, that's just in the UK. There's your BBC forecast on that Saturday program. I talked about the action taken by the British government Friday evening. The Spectator. These are the financial actions taken to supposedly save the economy. The Spectator says the UK is embarking on one of the most radical experiments in modern economic theory, and one that will no doubt be studied for decades to come. So this is the wartime economy now that we have to have because, well, it could be 500,000 deaths just in the UK. The Spectator says it's the most extensive intervention in the economy ever made by a supposedly free market government anywhere in the world. In effect, we will all soon be working for the government. In effect, we're all government employees. Everybody needs a bailout. The businesses need the bailout. The individuals need a bailout. Families need a bailout. We're all employed by the government. And this is something we have to do because it's an emergency. And it's the same in the United States. Governor Cuomo, the news networks love Andrew Cuomo. They love the governor of New York because he's out there every day. He's scaring people to death. He's demanding that people stay inside. Listen to Governor Cuomo on, I think this was from yesterday, clip two.
This is not a short-term situation. This is not a long weekend. This is not a week. The timeline, nobody can tell you. It depends on how we handle it. But 40%, up to 80% of the population will wind up getting this virus, but it's going to work its way through society. We'll manage that capacity rate, but it is going to be 4 months, 6 months, 9 months.
40 to 80% of New Yorkers get the virus, and it's going to last from 4 to 9 months. What we love about that video, CNN puts up the graphic that this is Governor Cuomo's personal advice. You've got Governor Cuomo off to the left, and then right in the middle, it's not a short-term situation, says the governor. Here's his personal advice. They get all on Donald Trump for his hunch, and we'll go back to that hunch in just a moment and see who's right. But his personal advice is that 40 to 80% of New Yorkers will get this. 40 to 80%. And it's going to go on for 9 months. Well, no wonder people are loading up on food and supplies. New York has a population, the state, 20 million people. So on the high end, that's 16 million people that get the disease, that catch the virus. 16 million at 3.4%. That's what the World Health Organization says. That means 544,000 deaths. That's very similar to the figures BBC, they were throwing that around this weekend or the end of last week. 500,000 people dying. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, he warned yesterday that the lockdown could impact 80 million people and last for 12 weeks. That's the president's, I think it's his Treasury Secretary. He's swings pretty far to the left politically as well. The president still is surrounded by quite a few radical leftists. Spend, spend, spend. That's what Mr. Mnuchin wants to do. 12 weeks. You have one announcement that's sane, that's hopeful, that's reasonable. And that's the tweet last night. We can't let the cure be worse than the disease. We can't destroy ourselves to try to arrest the spread of this flu. 80%. This is, for his part, Mayor de Blasio. I played a clip from him on Saturday. But here's what he said about the dire situation. Clip three.
The president does not act within days to maximize the use of the Defense Production Act to put every company that can produce a ventilator or a surgical mask or any other necessary supply, put them on full 24/7 production. And guarantee that those products get to the front line, get to where the need is greatest. If he doesn't do that in the next few days, if he does not mobilize the United States military immediately, not only will hundreds die around the nation who didn't need to die, thousands will die around the nation who didn't need to die. People who will die waiting to get into a hospital, people who will die at a hospital because there is no equipment or there's no medical personnel who can help them in time.
I think he used the word die 5-6 times there. People who will die, hundreds die, thousands die. Everybody's going to die if President Trump doesn't act and nationalize these companies and send the army into the streets. Governor Cuomo said yesterday, we are literally scouring the globe for medical supplies. To which one Twitter follower responded by saying, I'm scouring the globe for toilet paper. Cuomo said that they have 6,000 ventilators in New York and that he needs 30,000 more. They need 36,000 ventilators. Ventilators, these are for the worst case scenarios. The sick that can barely breathe. Now, right now, New York, it has the most cases in the United States, 17,000 confirmed, I guess. Most of them mild. The extremely sick, they need the ventilators. And the governor of New York says the state needs 30,000 more. There's a shortage, they keep saying. A shortage of masks, a shortage of hospital beds, a shortage of ventilators, a shortage of gowns that you wear in the hospitals. So far, the death count in New York, 150 people. Here's Mayor de Blasio again yesterday, clip four.
It's only getting worse. And in fact, April and May are going to be a lot worse. Right now, we are a third of the cases in the country. That's going to get worse. We're about two-thirds or more of the cases in New York State. That's going to get worse. But Chuck, the President of the United States is from New York City, and he will not lift a finger to help his hometown.
And so these are the storylines. It's going to get so much worse. It's going to last for months, maybe 9 months, maybe 12 months. President Trump's not doing anything. It's just the governors. The governors are saving the United States. CNN said, when the president fails America, we often turn to state governors in a desperate search for leadership. And so he's not doing anything, the president. And these leaders who are saying tens of thousands will die, millions and millions will get this. They're the ones that CNN, MSNBC, they just love them. They think they're doing fantastic. People are calling for Cuomo to run for president now because Joe Biden's gone missing. Look at all these narratives. They just keep throwing them out there every day in hopes that something will stick. We've got to scare people into voting him out of office. They're warning, they're giving the true statistics, and it's President Trump who's giving the false hope. What kind of, just supposing there is a dramatic turn headed up by the White House after this 15-day period, or maybe sooner, what kind of fight will there be then, politically, where you have all these governors that want the army to take to the streets? And what if President Trump finally says, okay, enough. It's trending downward. We've flattened the curve. We accomplished what we set out to do. We can't destroy our economy in the process. I guess we'll find out if that fight does happen. We'll find out what comes of it. Maybe in the next 7-8 days. But look, the leaders in New York, they're not alone. Governor DeWine in Ohio, he's now given a statewide stay-at-home order. You have Louisiana. Most of these cases, keep in mind, are in New York City, Queens to be specific, I believe, and then Seattle. So what do you do if you have an outbreak of sickness in Seattle and Queens? Well, of course, you shut down Louisiana. You shut down Nevada. You shut down Ohio. Ohio has 3 deaths. Total lockdown. Ohio, by the way, their cases are doubling every 6 days. That's just what the experts say. 2 weeks ago, they said they had 100,000 cases. It's doubling every 6 days, which means tomorrow, it's at 400,000 cases. So we have to act. I don't have my math here with me, but that's a lot of deaths. Even if you just go with the 1% death rate, 400,000. That's 4,000 deaths in the state of Ohio by tomorrow. That's what they're saying. And these stories, they just keep circulating. The estimates, they just keep being exaggerated. 40 to 80% all across New York. No wonder we have to act. We have to search the globe for 30,000 ventilators. This is nonstop, and there is no sign that this is about to subside at all, except maybe from the White House. So these governors from all over the United States, they're taking this action, and that's what they're expected to do. Right now, the medical experts have control. They're running the show, Dr. Fauci and his group. And they've called on everyone to overreact. To calm things down is not an option. Those that say don't panic, that's terrible advice. If we're overreacting, we're doing the right thing. That's what Dr. Fauci said just a week or so ago. Clip 5.
I like it when people are thinking I'm overreacting because that means we're doing it just right.
It's just right. If you're overreacting, if you're crazy, if you're issuing these insane declarations, that's just about right. You've just about got the right balance. Now, this same doctor, he was singing a very different tune back in 2009 when people were dying, in fact. Thousands were dying. He was a big-time doctor back then. He was advising the government back then. And what was he saying when the swine flu was killing as many as 13,000 Americans? Even 1,000 children? Well, he was saying, look, just don't be irrational. Don't overreact. Just use good judgment. You know, wash your hands. Try not to touch your face. And if you come down with a sickness, quarantine yourself. Don't go to work. Don't go to school. That was the advice coming from the good doctor in 2009. Not today. Today he says overreact. This is from that article I hurriedly quoted from last week, Victor Davis Hanson. He's talking about the swine flu here. In 2009, the U.S. was probably too lax in not issuing travel restrictions following rapid spread of the H1N1 swine flu that this time really was virally similar to the agent of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. The border with Mexico, where the contagion probably began, was never really closed. For months, no national alarm was sounded. Even today, we still don't know how many were infected or died given overlaps with other strains of annual flu, early lax reporting and monitoring, and general public nonchalance. Public didn't care early on. Remember, it started in the spring of 2009, and it didn't really explode until the fall. And the media, they didn't care for 4 months. Lax reporting. Here there was a pandemic declared in June of 2009, and what did the media do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It says here, later government guesses of infection ranged from 43 million to 89 million cases and deaths between 8,870 and 18,300. Children were especially vulnerable, quite unlike this coronavirus. It's the elderly who are especially vulnerable this time around. But back in 2009, it was the children. Says perhaps more than 1,000 children died. Are we then, this is Victor Davis Hanson, are we then to think that either by act of commission or omission, knowingly or unknowingly, a decision was made that the economic vitality of the country was more critical to the nation's health than the real chance in retrospect of the H1N1 virus infecting, say, 50 million Americans, killing perhaps 12,000, including 1,000 children? What course of action did the Obama administration take? For the health of the nation, well, it certainly didn't shut down restaurants. It did not grind the economy to the halt. Listen to Dr. Fauci, Anthony Fauci, 11 years ago. He's being asked about how to avoid getting the swine flu. And this was the good doctor's advice. Here's clip 6.
The other thing is to avoid, particularly when there's flu in the community, avoid places where there are people who are sick and coughing and it's a crowded place. Now, that's difficult to do. You can't isolate yourself from the rest of the world for the whole flu season.
You can't isolate yourself from the world. I mean, come on. That's ridiculous. We can't. I know this is deadly. I know it's rapidly spreading. But we can't self-isolate. We can't self-isolate to protect ourselves. That's what he said in 2009. He was a big-time supporter of the Obama administration. Hillary Clinton came out with a speech in 2012 about how to improve global health, and it brought that man to tears. And he emailed Cheryl Mills, the lawyer, the attorney of Hillary Clinton, and said, "That's no speech makes me cry. That one makes me cry. I love Hillary Clinton. You tell her I love her more than you do." And then later he emailed and said, "We all love Hillary Clinton." And that was the doctor there in that 2009 clip, just calling for calm. He wasn't sounding the alarm. Certainly not. Certainly not like he is today. Did he target restaurants and stores? Did he say, "Hey, you might want to think about not traveling"? Vice President Biden at the time said, "I wouldn't have my family traveling." And then the Obama people blasted him. They silenced him in a second. "What are you saying? You're going to cause a panic." Here is the doctor today, though, saying that we've got to do more. We've got to shut down more. We've got to self-isolate. That pandemic in 2009 lasted for 12 months. And in the end, 13,000 Americans died, including 1,000 children. Including 1,000 children. Today, it's 450, I think, 460. Aaron Ginn, he posted an article at medium.com. Not too familiar with that website, but anyway, he's a guy that he works more with stats in Silicon Valley. He's published articles all over the place, Town Hall, Breitbart. But he wrote about, I think this was Friday maybe Saturday morning, he wrote about the evidence over the hysteria. Some of the things that he brought out in his piece, they're quite interesting, given the state of hysteria and panic today. He says here, "While we should be concerned and diligent, the situation has dramatically elevated to a mob-like fear spreading faster than the virus itself." It says, when 13% of Americans believe they are currently infected with the COVID-19 virus, he says that's mathematically impossible, full-on panic is blocking our ability to think clearly and to determine how to deploy our resources to stop this virus. It says over 3/4 of Americans are scared of what we are doing to our society through law and hysteria, not of infection or spreading COVID-19 to the most vulnerable. They're more afraid of what's happening, the reaction to it. They're more afraid of the cure than they are of the disease. And you know how we know this? Look at the streets of London this morning. Look at New York. Look at Washington, D.C. Traffic is a lot lighter. But people went outside, so much so that Governor Cuomo had to scold them yesterday. "What are you doing? I gave the decree." And it's the same with the mayor of London. The same thing. People are panicking because of the shutdown. People are hoarding toilet paper, not because they're afraid they might get the disease. They are shocked by the way the world is reacting. Ginn says here in his piece, cases globally are increasing. It is a virus after all. But beware of believing metrics designed to intentionally scare, like cases doubling. Remember that out of Ohio? Cases are doubling every 6 days, they said. The governor, well, he just stepped aside because he had the expert next to him. And he looked at her and said, "Hey, take it away. Tell us how many people are going to die." "Well, let's start with 100,000 people have it right now. And that's doubling every 6 days." It says here, viruses, though, don't grow infinitely forever and ever. As with most things in nature, viruses follow a common pattern, a bell curve. In other words, it goes up, it's shaped like a bell, kind of curves upward, goes up high, peaks. We don't know quite where that will be with this one yet. And then it comes back down. But the way that they're talking, 8-9 months, 80%, tens of millions of people getting it. It's just going straight up. It's not going to come back down, they say. But you do the math, even with what we know thus far, and you see how far removed they are from reality. He's crunching numbers in this piece. It says Dr. Paul Awater, the clinical director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Johns Hopkins, he said, if you have a COVID-19 patient in your household, your risk of developing the infection is about 10%. If you are casually exposed to the virus in the workplace, your chance of infection is about 0.5%. According to Dr. Awater, these transmission rates are very similar to the seasonal flu. So this isn't the same. This isn't the same forecast or estimation that you're hearing from most other sources. But if you look at some of the averages, 300,000-400,000 people per year dying of the seasonal flu, 200,000-300,000 dying from the 2009 swine flu, and so far with corona, the Wuhan flu, 15,000 people, not even close. You could put together a bar graph and see corona barely making it above the bottom threshold. This article, it says here, as the U.S. continues to expand testing, the case fatality rate will decline over the next few weeks. There is little doubt that serious and fatal cases of COVID-19 are being properly recorded. What is unclear is the total size of mild cases. So testing is about to ramp up in a massive way in the United States. The governor of Texas yesterday, he said that of the people being tested, 90% of them are tested negative. 90%. In other words, people are rushing to get tested because they're in a panic. They're being told that we're all going to get this and that this many people are going to die. So they want to know if they have it or not. Only 10% do in Texas, 10% of those tested. And then there's the rush to try to get more tests out there so that we can know how many have it. Well, the problem with that, as I said on Saturday, is that the more that test positive, the more you know you have positive people that have tested positively, well, then the less lethal this particular virus is. Because that's not going to automatically make the death rate go up just because people got tested. It'll help us to understand how many more have it. But the death rate is what the death rate is. In New York, it's 150. In the UK, it's 270 or 80. In all of the United States, it's 450 or 60. President Trump, I played this quote or this clip for you last week. The point that he made early in March seems like such a long time ago. This was back when the WHO came out and said 3.4% of the people that get this disease are going to die. That's the death rate. And President Trump questioned that from the beginning. Here's clip 7.
Report today, the global death rate at 3.4%, and a report that the Olympics could be delayed. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think the 3.4% is really a false number. Now, this is just my hunch. But based on a lot of conversations with a lot of people that do this, because a lot of people will have this and it's very mild. They'll get better very rapidly. They don't even see a doctor. They don't even call a doctor. You never hear about those people. So you can't put them down in the category of the overall population in terms of this corona flu or virus. So you just can't do that. So if, you know, we have thousands or hundreds of thousands of people that get better just by, you know, sitting around and even going to work. Some of them go to work, but they get better. And then when you do have a death like you've had in the state of Washington, like you had one in California, I believe you had one in New York. You know, all of a sudden it seems like 3 or 4%, which is a very high number, as opposed to a fraction of 1%. But again, they don't know about the easy cases, because the easy cases don't go to the hospital. They don't report to doctors or the hospital in many cases. So I think that that number is very high. I think the number, personally, I would say the number is way under 1%. Now, with the regular flu, you know, we average from 27,000 to 77,000 deaths a year. Who would think that? I never knew that until 6 or 8 weeks ago.
That's the president of the United States on the phone with Fox News. March 5th, 3 weeks ago, a little less than 3 weeks ago. Just giving you some basic stats as well as a hunch. His hunch was that it's far less than 3.4%. So who's right? Even with the known cases, like I showed you on Saturday, you have the percentages just keep going down. The more testing there is, the more the death rate goes down. Right now, currently, as of today, it's at 1.3%. It started at 4.06 just on March 8th. Then 3.69, and then you can see the graph. You can see the chart. Every 2-3 days, it goes down another half a percentage point or a whole percentage point. That's because more are tested. So how many more, though, are not even tested but have it? What about the mild cases of coronavirus? If those are factored in, if millions and millions are getting it, like so many of these doomsday prophets are saying, then what must the mortality rate be? Is it true that it could actually be like an ordinary flu or maybe a bad flu season? You can't rule that out. And that's basically what Aaron Ginn was getting at with his article posted at Medium.com, which is why, no doubt, Medium decided to pull that article yesterday. We've got to get rid of that article. It says this post is under investigation or was found in violation of the Medium rules. The article's now under investigation. The numbers that he used, the statistics that he put forward, the calculations that he made, we've got to blot that out. This is not the time to be a contrarian. This is not the time to go against the mob. This is not the time to question the experts. This is not the time to question Governor Cuomo's 80% will get this. Can't do it. You just have to go along with the mob. If they establish their narrative, doesn't matter what the facts say. Doesn't matter what the statistics are. The Wall Street Journal says, yet some of the web's gatekeepers are tempted to go further and to stamp out the free debate that helped alert Americans to the threat of the virus in the first place. They want to require conformity with the judgment of expert institutions, even as many of those institutions themselves woefully misjudged the situation months or even weeks ago. All of these miscalculations, all of this horrible judgment, all of this scaremongering, all of these alarmist declarations, shutting down states, shutting down nations, sending the army to the streets. That's what's happening in the world. Is the cure worse than the virus itself? Well, look around and see what's happening. That BBC article, the one that said, hey, 500,000, that's worst case scenario, 250,000 if we do some things to try to arrest the spread, but 20,000 deaths here in the UK, that'll be pretty good. We'll be happy with that. That article says, every year more than 500,000 people die in England and Wales. Factor in Scotland and Northern Ireland, and the figure tops 600,000. Every year, 600,000 people die in Great Britain. Right now, the coronavirus death toll is, I think, around 200. Every year, 600,000 die from various causes, 8,000 of which from the flu. It says here, the coronavirus deaths will not be on top of this. Many would be within this normal number of expected deaths. In other words, I guess that's their way of saying it's not really going to affect the overall figures at all. I don't know if that means the BBC thinks that these were people that were going to die anyway, but that is the case. Certainly has been in Italy. In fact, there's an article that came out from, it's in the Telegraph, actually. The title was, Why We Have So Many Coronavirus Patients Die in Italy. It says, the country's high death toll is due to an aging population, we've talked about that before, overstretched health system, and the way fatalities are reported. And this article goes on to say that, it's quoting from this professor who advises Italy's Minister of Health, so he's pretty high up. This professor is saying that really only 12% of the death certificates have shown a direct causality from coronavirus. Only 12%, because these are people with some serious underlying health issues, some of them multiple health issues. But if they die and they're tested for a mild case of coronavirus, you can check that mark. You can check that one up for a corona death. Now, that's at the Telegraph. How long before that article's moved or taken down? You can't say that. You've got to say that we're all Italy. You've got to say France, Spain, Germany, and the UK. They're all going the way of Italy. And certainly the United States. We're just 2 weeks away. They were saying that about 10 days ago, by the way. 2 weeks away from Italy. And we get there on Friday. The United States. Well, judge for yourself. Look at the statistics. Even Italy is a nation of 60 million people. Let's just go with Governor Cuomo, who said 40 to 80% will get this virus. If 40% of Italy got this disease, they're the farthest along, right? If 40% of them got it, that's 24 million people. If 1% of 24 million die, that's 240,000. If 1/10 of 1% die as a result of coronavirus, that's 24,000. And what's the death total in Italy right now? 5,500, not even close. So it doesn't matter what all of the statistics say. Thou shalt panic. That's the law. That's the commandment. Everyone must panic. There are no exceptions. And if you call our reasoning into question, well, we might just have to take that post down and investigate. You're violating the rules to go against this narrative. That quote we gave to you the other day, America has been fundamentally transformed. Talked about that verse, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Worshiping the God of this world. And then it points out how that the radical left is far worse than communism. It's far worse than Marxism. Now, some people might have read that quote from the March issue of The Trumpet and thought, boy, that Gerald Fleury, he's really taking it a little bit too far. Well, look at the world right now. Look at what nations are doing to one another. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. Heather McDonald talked about that statement Governor Cuomo made, I think it was on Friday, where he said, if everything we do saves just one life, I'll be happy. If we can keep one corona victim from dying, then he will have fulfilled his objective. And the point that she makes is that decision-making, wherever there's a person in authority and decision-making, there's always going to be trade-offs. She says, for example, 16,000 Americans every year are murdered, and you could easily cut that down by putting every single murderer in jail and never letting them out because so many of them are repeat offenders. Just put them in jail, throw away the key. You think Governor Cuomo would go for that program? Or Mayor de Blasio? It would bring down the figure. Not as many people would die of murder. It's not even considered. 40,000 people die every year in traffic deaths. That's just in the United States. How much of that could be reduced if the speed limit everywhere was 10, 20, 30 miles an hour? How much of that could be reduced if Congress added all these regulations that cars had to be heavier, there had to be more safety, you know, procedures in them and such? But we don't do that. What about the 40,000 or so that die from the flu every year? That's on average. We could certainly cut back on that figure if we did what we're doing now, self-isolating, shutting down businesses, shutting down restaurants, shutting down the gymnasium. She goes on and talks about the damage being done with the current shutdown. Heather McDonald, she says, is there any limit to the damage we are willing to inflict on the world economy to mitigate the infection? What are the benefits of each new commerce-killing measure, and how do they compare to the costs? What are the criteria for declaring success in the coronavirus fight, and who decides whether they have been met? Well, she makes some of the same points that Victor Davis Hanson has made, and more are starting to make this. Look, decision-making, it always comes with trade-offs. How many people will die in New York City as a result of a total shutdown for other causes? Not the disease. Here in the UK, Peter Hitchens, he said at the Daily Mail, and so here I am asking bluntly, is the close down of the economy the right answer to the coronavirus? I'll be accused of undermining the NHS and threatening public health and all kinds of other conformist rubbish, he says. But I ask you to join me, because if we have this wrong, we have a great deal to lose. He says, I don't just address the plea to my readers. I think my fellow journalists should ask the same questions. I think MPs of all parties should ask them. When they are urged tomorrow, that's today, he wrote this yesterday, when they are urged on Monday to pass into law a frightening series of restrictions on ancient liberties and vast increases in police state powers. This is Peter Hitchens. A little bit of common sense, a little bit of sanity, a little bit of rational thinking. Let's think this through. Let's think about what we're doing to ourselves. He says, did you know that the government and opposition had originally agreed that there would not even be a vote on these measures? Even Vladimir Putin might hesitate before doing anything so blatant. If there is no serious rebellion against this plan in the Commons, then I think we can commemorate tomorrow, March 23rd, that's today, 2020, as the day Parliament died. Yet, as far as I can see, the population cares more about running out of laboratory paper. The ordinary citizens, they really don't know what's happening. And they're not even exactly obeying the mandates, the decrees from these mayors, these governors. There weren't too many Brits taking it seriously over the weekend. Beautiful weather here. Beautiful weather in New York City on Saturday, and that brought a lot of people outdoors. Car parks had to be closed in the forest because they were so crowded. Snowdonia National Park said that they had their busiest ever visitor day in living memory. You want to close all the shops? Well, then, all right, we'll go to the national parks, and we'll fill up the parking lot. The busiest day in living memory. That was on Saturday. The DIY stores and garden centers, also one of their busiest days of the year. The Telegraph said this, there has been a deep concern within Whitehall as it emerged over the weekend that public messages urging people to stay at home and avoid socializing were apparently being ignored. with pictures of packed beauty spots, seaside promenades, and parks. Some packed tourist spots experienced their busiest ever days as people made the most of the sunshine. They went outside. Even some pubs and restaurants tried to get around the rules by saying that, well, we're just a shop. We're just selling takeout. But if you're going to come in, you might as well sit down here. This is the London mayor reacting this morning to people getting outside on a beautiful day in the UK. Clip 8.
Are you saying that quite soon the police will stop them and fine them or arrest them or send them home again, and we might have the army doing the same kind of thing on the streets of the capital?
Well, the emergency bill is quite clear. For public health reasons, because we face a public health emergency, because we face a social emergency, because we face an economic emergency, these measures are in that bill. It's really important that the police are focused on the priorities they've got, dealing with violent crime and other issues. But clearly, if it is the case that people continue to act in a way that's leading to this disease spreading, then those sorts of things will be things that will have to be considered.
We'll have to consider arresting them all for going outside and maybe even sending in the army, says the mayor of London. It seems like there's going to be some constitutional issues there, whether here in the UK or in the United States. Governor Hogan, he's of Maryland. This is a Republican. And he, too, he can't believe how many people would go outside and cluster together. This is clip 9.
The social distancing is not being enforced, and it's a little crazy to see the kind of crowds at the cherry blossoms. I mean, people have to listen. There's people that are out there. I mean, you are endangering not only yourselves, yeah, but your fellow citizens by not listening to these warnings. We've been getting pretty tough out here in Maryland on folks, limiting people to groups of 10.
That's the Maryland governor. And then here's, again, the governor of New York for his part. He toured through Central Park yesterday, and here's his reaction, clip 10.
I was in New York City yesterday. It was a pretty day. There is a density level in New York City that is wholly inappropriate. You would think there was nothing going on in parts of New York City. You would think it was just a bright, sunny Saturday. I don't know what I'm saying that people don't get. I'm normally accused of being overly blunt and direct. And I take that. It's true. I don't know what they're not understanding. This is not life as usual. None of this is life as usual. And this kind of density, we talk about social distancing. I was in these parks. You would not know that anything was going on. This is just a mistake. It's a mistake. It's insensitive. It's arrogant. It's self-destructive. It's disrespectful to other people. And it has to stop, and it has to stop now. This is not a joke, and I am not kidding.
These are all very, very liberal cities. That's why those leaders are voted into office, these radical leftists. And they're astounded. They're beside themselves. They can't understand why the sheeple won't go along and just obey every dictate. Lock themselves inside. Lock themselves in their houses. This is amazing to witness. They just assume everybody's going to hole up for 9 months so that we can destroy this president, get rid of the disease. That's an aside. But really, I know the economy is just going to be destroyed, but that'll be on President Trump, you see. And then we can finally get Joe Biden in there, or maybe Andrew Cuomo. Maybe he'll sneak in at the last second. A month and a half ago, it wasn't even getting any coverage. In fact, if you talked about containing the disease, you were a racist. Now it's self-isolation for more than a billion people on Earth. Forget about hugging a Chinese in Italy. like the mayor said we should do in February, early February. Now you can't even get near to your loved ones. One wild swing to the next. What's happening in the cities on these beautiful sunny days might give us some insights into the level of support that will be there when someone, President Trump, Prime Minister Johnson, whoever, finally steps up and says, okay, that's enough. And maybe that tweet last night is a good indication. We'll see. President Trump said, we cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself. So we'll reevaluate, he says, at the end of that 15-day period. That's all that we have time for on today's program. I'm sure there'll be plenty more to get into on tomorrow's broadcast. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.